on the south bank of the Thames River in London, England, across from the Parliament buildings at Westminster. Along the Riverwalk, there is a concrete wall that has become the National COVID Memorial. Running 500 meters, there are more than 220,000 hand-painted hearts, each representing a person who died in the UK from COVID-19. 220,000 hearts. Walking along this half kilometer took us about 10 minutes. It's a visceral and powerful reminder of how our lives were, and in some ways still are, affected by the pandemic. The shutdowns, the inability to gather in our churches or see family or friends. Canadian fatalities from COVID are fewer. To date, about 54,000 people have lost their lives. But as we walked along the COVID memorial in London, I was grateful that there was a space in the city dedicated to remembering. Being there brought back many memories of a time that changed us in a whole lot of ways. Places to remember. It's appropriate that there is a Remembrance Day service here at St. John's, because this church was built as a memorial church. Consecrated in 1949, just after the end of the Second War, its purpose was to stand as a memorial, honoring all Vancouver's sons and daughters who answered the call to serve their country. Dominating the interior of this memorial church is the lunette-shaped stained glass window on the south side, dedicated in 1951 by Bishop Godfrey Gower. He dedicated it in memory, loving memory, of all those who fell in the world wars in service of their country. It's a striking piece of stained glass art designed by Yvonne Williams in her time, one of Canada's most respected stained glass artists. And looking at it, you can see clearly depicted a close relationship between church and country. The center panel, to which your eye is immediately drawn, has the cross of Jesus with Jesus Christ just in front, hands raised as in ascension. And then a ray of light connecting the cross with a chalice for Holy Communion. Two figures kneel beside the chalice, a dove flying upwards, and the words, "Lift up your hearts," connecting the chalice and the figure of Christ. And beneath this, there's the crest of the province of British Columbia, with the symbol of the Governor General of Canada, the crown above it. Then panels to the east and west depict women and men of Canada's fighting forces. A nurse, a merchant seaman, a sailor, an airman, a soldier, and an airwoman. Beneath each of these figures is a shield bearing the crest of the service represented. And spanning the whole window, the base of the whole window, is this text. We build not temples unto martyrs as unto gods, but memorials unto dead men whose spirits with God all are living. Long quote. When I first saw this window some decades ago now, I wondered about this text. It's not from the Bible. It is, to the best of my reckoning, from St. Augustine's towering masterpiece, City of God. It was chosen, I assume, to be clear that this church was a place where the worship of God is primary and not the worship of those who have died. But the symbolism of this window, when you look at it, you'll notice dogwood and flags and all sorts of other national emblems. And the symbolism, particularly the proximity of the cross with the coat of arms of this province, shows, does it, an alignment of the Christian way with war that makes me, anyway, a little bit uncomfortable. Don't misunderstand me. Our endurance through the recent pandemic pales in comparison with the impact of the two world wars. The numbers tell the story. World War I, the so-called war to end all wars, lasted for 4 years, from 1914 to 1918, with casualties estimated to be 10 million military dead, 7 million civilian deaths, 21 million injured, and 7.7 million missing or imprisoned. The Second World War, 6 years in duration from 1939 to 1945, resulted in over 60 million people killed, including 13 to 20 million from war-related disease and famine. Many, many of those killed in those wars were young people from this city, from this community, from this church. Their names will be read, those from this church, a little later. Staggering numbers. And the impact of those deaths, the sheer number of losses, and the post-war related psychological impact on veterans and the families of the bereaved cannot be overestimated. No wonder both here and just down 16th at Canadian Memorial United Church, Christians sought to align their pastoral hearts with the profound suffering and trauma that so many knew, not as a one-time thing, but as a life-altering experience. We will remember them. So you'd think, after all that loss of human life, all that bloodshed, trauma and suffering, that the human family would have once and for all sworn off war. But here we are today, with, as we meet here at St. John's Memorial Church, 32 ongoing conflicts occurring around the world. Notably and uppermost in most of our minds are the wars in Ukraine and Gaza in Israel-Palestine. Images from war-torn countries dominate our news feeds on computer screens and TVs. It's so painful to witness the suffering of innocent people, particularly children and families especially, that I'll confess to turning away frequently, not being able to absorb or even look again at the suffering that happens day after day after day all over the earth. But my turning away does nothing to alleviate it, and on this Remembrance Day, we gather to turn our eyes again to the horror of war and its cost, and to pray for peace, remembering especially those whose lives were so horrendously stolen from us. There's an awkward relationship between Christian faith and war. Through the world wars, one and two, churches in this country and indeed around the world provided safe spaces for people who had loved ones in military service. History records the large number of church funerals or memorials for those killed in action and those who were lost. We can understand why churches, particularly Anglican churches, became places where military colors and national flags were hung to honor those who made the supreme sacrifice. And we can understand how the church's theological alignment with values of freedom and human dignity, which were under such threat in the world wars through the rise of fascism, provided a rationale for the waging of war. But too often lost is the teaching of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, where he is crystal clear about how his followers are to regard those with whom we differ. But I say to you, love your enemies, Jesus said, and pray for those who persecute you, so that you can be children of your Father in heaven, who makes sunrise on the evil and on the good. And in the Beatitudes, he says very clearly and without any qualification, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Can there be any doubt that followers of Jesus must, in our hearts, be pacifists? In his book On Peace, Thomas Merton, reflecting on the brutality and inhumanity of Auschwitz, argued that in order for something like the Holocaust to happen, a kind of arithmetic logic needs to prevail. Merton wrote this: "It is enough to affirm one basic principle. Anyone belonging to class X or nation Y or nation Z is to be regarded as subhuman and worthless, and consequently has no right to exist, and all the rest will follow without difficulty." Merton went on, "As long as this principle is easily available, as long as it is taken for granted, as long as it can be spread out on the front pages of newspapers at a moment's notice and accepted by all, we have no need of monsters. Ordinary policemen and good citizens will take care of everything." Followers of Jesus who seek to walk the way of love do not regard anyone as subhuman or worthless. We see each human life as a gift from God, and in our baptismal covenant pledge to respect the dignity of every human being. War is hell. It is not of God. It is an expression of human sin and separation, and its consequences are always tragic and unbearably sad. So we pause this day to remember the fallen, those who died, those whose bodies were never recovered, and those families whose loved ones were irrevocably changed, lest we forget. We will keep silence for a space to honor and remember those who fought. And in that silence, you may offer a prayer that the Prince of Peace might move powerfully in the hearts of minds of those who wage war even now. And you might ask God to help you live more fully into the spirit of the Beatitudes, so that wherever life finds you this day, you can be a peacemaker, one of God's beloved children.